Hey, folks, what would you do this summer with all the money you'd save if you didn't have a car payment for the next 5 months? Hopefully, buy lots of merchandise for the Mike Church Trading Post. Well, right now at Bulldog Kia in Athens, Georgia, take advantage of the Summer's on Us sales event with zero payments for 5 months. Plus, get 0% financing for up to 66 months on the one-of-a-kind Kia Soul, or the high-tech Kia Forte, or the newly redesigned Kia Optima. Bulldog Kia is where Mrs. Church and I have purchased our vehicle since 2011. They're great friends, and they'll treat you right, too. And for Mike Church Show listeners anywhere in the continental U.S., they will ship your new Kia to you for free. Don't cost nothing. That means your new Kia is only a click or call away. For details, call them at 855-BULLDOG or go to bulldogkia.com. We'll see you at Bulldog Kia.
The Veritas Radio Network is guaranteed the right to offend, annoy, agitate, shout heresy, and entertain.
You should start programming right now.
Kind of like the cultural sewage served up on Bravo or CMT, only it's on 24 hours a day, except Sundays. When the truth gets you angry and you throw your smartphone, remember, no one is forcing you to listen to the truth on the Veritas Radio Network.
You can't handle the truth.
You're doing that of your own free will. That's what makes this country great and any gay marriage pointless.
That's offensive.
So there isn't much you can do about it, Chatterhead.
I'm trying to think, but nothing happened.
Grab a book, take a vow, and conform your mind to reality. Otherwise, you're just another Judas-inspired Karl Marx wannabe.
And your children will steal your credit card number to buy tickets to the Miley Cyrus Twerker's Ball.
I came in like a wrecking ball.
Are you ready? Let's get it on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.
Song from the fame of our fathers, and that's what this is, means it must be time for another Constitution Hour. And that's exactly what it is. This is the Constitution Hour featuring Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman here exclusively on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network, radio the way it should be. If you missed any of the previous 24 episodes of this show, remember, you can find all of them on the website at veritasradionetwork.com, and you can download any of them as 99-cent webisodes or become a Founders Pass member for as little as 23 cents per day and have streaming download access to all those episodes, all the episodes of my show, and all the shows here on the Crusade Channel. Just go to veritasradionetwork.com/join. All right. So, to this week's Constitution Hour, we will welcome our host, Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, who is standing by on the Skype Maker hotline. And we have some juicy stuff to talk about here tonight. Kevin, greetings to you. How are you, my friend?
I'm well, Mike. How are you?
14 hours and running again. I see these stories that we're going to cover here today, and one of them involves Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor. And I saw a clip of this the other day, and then I saw a headline. I think it was at theweek.com, I believe. Might have been written by Damon Linker, and that is that Sonia Sotomayor delivers blistering rebuke to Republicans on civil rights law or civil rights issue or civil rights statutes or civil rights titles. To tell you the truth, I did not read much beyond the headline because it came from Linker. But this is one of the subjects that you wanted to discuss tonight, and it's something that we have discussed many, many times here on this show and on shows in the old station in the old country going all the way back to 2007. What makes this latest Sotomayor exhortation so special?
Well, it seems to me that in this case of Mr. Streiff from Utah, Justice Sotomayor is just giving vent to her pent-up desire to tell people how oppressed she's been. So what people are describing admiringly is her upbraiding Republicans on the question of civil rights generally, really, I think, is her embarrassing herself, because the majority opinion in the case, first of all, was written by Justice Clarence Thomas, who, as you, I'm sure, know,
I do,
grew up as a black man in segregated Georgia, not as a Hispanic in New York City, as Sotomayor did. So if anybody on today's Supreme Court knows anything about segregation or racial disabilities in the old days, it would be Thomas. But the facts of the case are so tangentially related to this issue that it's as if she had written this little speech in advance of hearing any cases this term, looking for an opportunity to slip it in. And so essentially what happened was the police were surveilling a house where they thought there was drug activity. A guy came out, they stopped him. Turned out they didn't have any legal grounds to stop him. Okay, while they were at it, they ran his ID, found that he had an outstanding arrest warrant. Then the cop did a search, found that he had methamphetamine and various drug paraphernalia on him, and so they arrested him. So Thomas's majority opinion, that was joined by, among others, Justice Breyer, remember a Clinton appointee, said, well, yes, it's true that if you were observing all the legal niceties, the original stop was not permissible, but on the other hand, the relationship between the stop and the ultimate arrest and conviction are pretty remote. That is, the guy actually had an outstanding warrant. So Thomas's evaluation of the situation was that it's not as if somebody were just arbitrarily finding people to stop, let alone, as Justice Sotomayor intimated, doing so on a racial basis, and then accidentally happened to find that this guy was carrying drugs and drug paraphernalia. And so Sotomayor was on and on about this trendy idea of, quote-unquote, the talk. You know what that is?
No.
Well, there's this, there's this idea that's kind of been floating out there in the American culture for the last 4 or 5 years, I guess, that every dark-hued person or every dark-hued parent has a talk with his child about the way to behave in order to avoid trouble with the police. Don't run down the street. Don't approach people threateningly, and so on. And so Sotomayor says, well, this treatment of Mr. Streiff, who, remember, as the majority said, was a criminal, ultimately arrested because he had an outstanding warrant and he was carrying drug paraphernalia and drugs. This fellow's treatment would remind people that if you're black, Hispanic, or whatever, you are apt to be treated unfairly on that basis. So, again, it seems to me that it's just kind of remotely related to what actually happened in the case, and that was what the bipartisan majority on the court said. That this, the fact that she got so hyped up about it just reflects her longstanding pattern of racial expressions of various kinds of racial animus on the Supreme Court. And remember, she's the judge who said that because she was, quote-unquote, a wise Latina, she would make better decisions than a white man would.
Right, that's right.
Yeah, so notice that the media didn't really, although you and I at the time made noise about that, the mainstream media didn't have any problem with Judge Sotomayor saying being a wise Latina, in her own estimation, made her superior, say, to you and me in her reasoning capability. We might be skeptical about that appraisal, but that's her.
Just a little bit.
Yeah. So another interesting thing about it, of course, is this idea of the talk. The implication is, of course, that non Northern European descended people in America are apt to be nabbed randomly by cops and mistreated randomly by cops, and this is entirely racial. But there's more than one thing to say about that. First of all, it is true that there are, on average, are more interactions between minority, especially males, and Northern European descended American males. But the reason for that is because the neighborhoods in which minority people live tend disproportionately to be afflicted with crime. Where you have more crime, you're going to have more cops.
No!
If the cops are behaving as we would hope they would behave and trying to protect the minority people in those neighborhoods from the criminals. So the idea that there's something wrong with a society in which the cops go where the crime is to be found, I think, is highly objectionable. And, of course, the other thing is that, as you and I both know, white people have the talk with their kids, too, right? But it's not the same talk.
No.
And it's talk about, you know, which neighborhoods to avoid because they're crime-ridden. And you're not supposed to say that, even though every reporter who's reported on these matters has known that perfectly well. You never hear, you never see commentary on Sotomayor or hear radio or television people reporting her latest venting of spleen say, well, Justice Sotomayor is apparently unaware that a lot of people who hear this reported are going to think, yeah, well, we have to have the talk too, but it's not the one you're talking about. So, I think she's a pretty spectacular illustration of a phenomenon you and I talked about one or two episodes ago concerning the First Lady, quote-unquote, Michelle Obama. You know, Michelle Obama has expressed the fact that she's remains angry and actually continues to feel herself afflicted with racism, that she's encountered expressions of racism even while she's been First Lady. So, for example, she said, in one instance, she went to a grocery store and somebody in the grocery store asked her to hand her an item that was on a high shelf. And this was an expression of racism, she thought. Well, you know,
it couldn't be that she was tall, and she is, right?
And speaking as a 6 foot 4 inch male, I can honestly say that I often have people either ask me to reach high things or have occasion just gratuitously to do that for them. Why? Because it's nice.
It is. It's kind, and you take advantage of God's blessing of height that some people don't have. And you have access to things, and you can see them also from a different angle that people can't see them from. And you may be able to say, I wouldn't stick my hand up there. There's a cottonmouth snake sitting right up there. You can't see him, but I can. Of course. Right.
Go ahead. So my point is that Sotomayor, I think, like Obama, Mrs. Obama, has a kind of chip on her shoulder where she's just looking for opportunities to be offended or to feel aggrieved. And again, feeling aggrieved by Clarence Thomas over the idea that people other than she on the Supreme Court are unaware of some history of racial oppression or something and ignore the way that minority people were treated or some such. It is a little bit of a mockery in itself. And besides that, of course, the idea that this kind of episode is somehow similar to long since banished official racial categorization by government in order to put minorities down, not the racial categorization by government in order to prefer particular minorities such as, oh, I don't know, Sonia Sotomayor, despite their inferior qualifications for various benefits. The idea that the old kind of racial qualification in order to put particular minorities down continues is ridiculous. Nobody could believe it if they weren't possessed of the kind of fevered brain that you find in left-wing intellectual circles such as the legal profession.
I like the fevered brain part. This is the Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Gutzman, part on the Crusade Channel, part of the Veritas Radio Network. I'd like to read something to you that I dug up in relation to this case. And I think we can spend the remainder of this segment, and if not the remainder of the broadcast, talking about this point of view. There's two things that I heard you say that made me triggered something that I think our audience would very much like for you to discuss and for us to discuss. One is this. I'll just read this from the Washington Times coverage of the story that we are currently covering. This is what the story says. And this comes to us in the style of Sotomayor's fierce dissent slams high court's ruling on evidence from illegal stops. This is written by Robert Barnes yesterday. Quote, but more memorable will be the blistering dissents written by Breyer's fellow liberal justices Sotomayor and Alana Kagan, who joined at least in part by Justice Darth Vader Ginsburg. Kagan's was a point-by-point disagreement with the, quote, the majority's misapplication, close quote, of the court's precedent, a ruling she said offers police, quote, incentive to violate the Constitution, close quote. To the people that ratify the Constitution have ever, to quote Chris Tucker in the movie Friday, ever, never, ever, have conceived that the Constitution could be violated by municipal police officers, Professor Gutzman?
Well, no, and actually that brings up another point I was going to raise about this case, and that is that the U.S. Supreme Court took the case on appeal from the Utah Supreme Court. And if the Utah Supreme Court had wanted to, it could have held that Article 1, Section 14 of the Utah Supreme Court, which is analogous to the Fourth Amendment, banned this kind of search, and there wouldn't have been anything to appeal. That is, the Utah Supreme Court is the ultimate authority on the meaning of the Utah Constitution, and if the defendant had won in the Utah Supreme Court, that would have been the end of it, if the ruling had been based on the Utah Constitution. But here we see what often happens, which is that state judiciaries just assume either the interchangeability of their own state constitutional provisions and the analogous federal ones, or they completely ignore their own state constitutional provisions. So I've actually seen some libertarian friends of ours complaining about this. It sets up a police state in America, right? If you're coming out of a suspected drug house and you have meth and pipe in your pocket, and you could find yourself in jail. That really strikes me as a police state. So if you have an outstanding warrant, actually, and you're searched, you could find yourself in jail. So anyway, the point is Utah's judiciary could have put an end to this case if it had wanted to by saying that this matter was covered by the Utah Constitution. But, of course, apparently another reason they may not have done that is because they didn't think that the Utah Constitution meant that this guy should get away with what he had done. You and I also could take exception, I guess, to the idea that it's a good thing to have criminal penalties for people who are smoking methamphetamine. I think that's an interesting question.
But ultimately, though, that really is a question that the 10th Amendment says should be answered by the states anyways, isn't it?
Well, certainly the drug question is, no doubt about it. And we haven't heard anybody who's complaining about this case even mention the federalism issue at all. That's why I brought up the analogous state constitutional provision. This whole thing could very easily have been decided in the Utah government, but you're not going to hear Sotomayor or Kagan complaining about that either, because they take for granted that every question of criminal procedure should ultimately end up being decided by them.
And that's the way most people think about it today. And it's unfortunate, but the question that I asked was, because anyone that ratified the Constitution have ever even thought of this? I think one of the ironies of that question, when we juxtapose that was then and this is now, is that most of criminal prosecution and policing, if you will, if it were done at all, most certainly would have been done by the municipal authority at a very local level. So it's not as though the framers of the Constitution weren't well aware of how law was administered and how law was enforced, or what we call today LEOs, law enforcement officers, and how they would conduct their affairs and how they would just conduct themselves in the discourse of their duties. But today, Kevin, we don't seem to even give a thought to it. You know, someone is arrested for whatever, drunk driving or whatever. That's on you're violating my constitution rights. How can a officer of the law possibly violate an alleged right that that comes from the Constitution when the Constitution, even if you wanted to do a show on the Bill of Rights, and we've done a couple of dozen of them, we could just bring up James Madison's protestation, which we now see in its full bloom of the errors that he predicted, that if you guys write a Bill of Rights down and you can't write an exhaustive one down, you're just begging for trouble, right?
Right. Well, the surveillance in question in this case was being performed by state legal officials. So it was a defense counsel who brought up this Fourth Amendment issue, and they're then the ones who implicated the federal government in it. I guess likely they decided among themselves that, well, we're more likely to get a friendly ruling to the defendant from a federal judge than we are from our state judges here in Utah. And this is the way this whole federal system works now. The fact that these questions have mostly been nationalized means that for lawyers choosing between the state and federal assertions of rights is just a matter of what lawyers call forum shopping. You're deciding which kind of judge you want to end up having decide the case. So if you think you're a defense lawyer and you think your Utah judges are more liberal, you might assert your Utah state constitutional rights. And on the other hand, if you're looking to the post-Scalia Supreme Court or to your circuit court out there in Utah, your federal circuit court of appeals, why, you might think, I'm going to do better in the ninth, is it the ninth or the tenth circuit in Utah? I'm not sure. But anyway, I'm going to do better in my federal circuit court of appeals than I'm going to do in the Supreme Court. So, this whole thing gets back to, Why is this a national question? Why should the federal government be deciding this in the first place? And, of course, the answer is, well, it isn't. And
they shouldn't be. You know, I think one of the other ironies of this is when Utah was not a state, when it was still a territory and it was applying to be a state, I don't know if it's ironic or humorous. Maybe it's a combination of both. But the Congress kept telling them no. Didn't they? Because they had these bigamy laws or this polygamous practices, and they refused to outlaw them. Now, what's outstanding about that is that the Congress never denied whether or not Utah as a territory could write its own laws when it came to some intimate affair amongst its citizens like polygamy. Right, Kevin?
Right. Well, my own estimation is that Utah should have been able to decide this question for itself once it came to statehood. But what they were made to do was essentially to vow while still in the territorial stage that they would not have polygamy in Utah. And thus the church authorities in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Mormons, decided that they had a special revelation and that polygamy was no longer allowed. And actually, this is the kind of thing that's happened among the Mormons a couple of times. In the 1960s, in the middle of the Civil Rights Revolution, they had the Civil Rights Movement, the Civil Rights legal changes, they had another special revelation that said, well, black men should no longer be excluded from various positions in the Mormon Church. So it's very convenient when you have constant access to
revelation,
authoritative, mutating church teaching. But I, again, I think clearly that constitutionally, it should be up to the people of Utah to decide whether they have polygamy. It's not really a federal matter. This is related to the discussion you and I had years ago about Mitt Romney's proposal in order to try to ingratiate himself with people who realized that when he had been governor of Massachusetts, he had taken the lead in making Massachusetts the first state in the country to recognize gay marriage. During his presidential campaign, he came out for a national marriage amendment banning gay marriage, declaring that marriage was one man and one woman. And I oppose that too, because there's no reason why that should be a national policy.
Now,
it should be up to Utah or Louisiana or Massachusetts to make their own rules. Likely they would make different rules, and people in Louisiana, Utah, and Massachusetts would be happier for it.
Indeed. I tell you what, why don't we leave it there, and we'll come back with segment number two and pick up on this question, maybe a little more commentary, and then talk about the latest controversy or disagreement that is brewing between the Bush family and the Republican Party, and perhaps some of the chicanery and silliness of the Trump versus Clinton campaign that already has manifested itself. Folks, we've got a lot to talk about. Don't touch that. You didn't say the magic word. Don't touch that dial. Because Constitution Hour with Professor Dr. Kevin Goodsman will return in just a moment. Remember, if you miss any of the previous episodes, you can always download them at VeritasRadioNetwork.com.
If Patrick Henry were still alive, he would listen to the Constitution Hour featuring Professor Kevin Goodsman, debuting at noon Central here on the Veritas Radio Network's Crusade.